two things I got to do. One, two. Okay, Kath.
Thank you. Hi, everybody. I'm alcoholic. I'm Maria Hoffman. And I'm a proud member of the Our Common Problem Group in Largo, Florida. And I always describe Largo next to Clearwater and St. Pete. So many people think of Largo as being in the Keys. Don't I wish? We moved here 21, 22 years ago to Florida from South Jersey. And it's not warm enough for me. I wish winter would be over. My sobriety date is December 24th, 1986. Should have been a couple weeks earlier. I went to my first meeting on the 15th, and I knew walking out of that meeting that life was over. I was doomed because I really did belong there. I was afraid it, well, you know that expression, where there's smoke, there's fire. And someone had thought that it was important enough to drag me there. And I figured if he thought there might be a reason to take me there, well, maybe, possibly. And by the time I sat through that first meeting, I knew life was over. You know, no more laughing, no more grinning, no more fun, you know. I was 41 years old, and I knew that was way too young to be alcoholic or to stop drinking, for goodness sake. And I knew what alcoholism was. You know, I had grown up with it. I had lots of examples in my family. And I didn't qualify. You know, I was not an angry drunk. I was not a fighting drunk like members of my family. I was a... what I thought, an excellent employee. And I was there, I showed up. I never missed time. And you never knew that I was dying of a hangover. You know, I wouldn't let it show. Even if you were with me the night before, you wouldn't know that I was on death's door with a hangover. I smiled and said, everything's fine. And around noon, 1 o'clock, I'd wake up and think, God, I wonder what I've done today. I wonder how I got through. Who did I... I was managing a fairly large retail store. And I would wonder, you know, I wonder who I helped or what I've handled. Or it was almost like, well, you know, coming to. And, of course, by the time I left work, I had recovered enough to stop on the way home. I had a very long drive, 45 minutes, an hour. So you know I had to stop on the way home. Let me start with childhood. Midwest, Iowa. My father was 65 when I was born. And, you know, there were teases and taunts from the neighborhood kids. You know, is that your grandfather? And lots of kids making fun, and we were the poorest ones in the neighborhood. Everyone else had nicer furniture, nicer clothes. There were people who had cars. And nicer parents, definitely more loving homes. And some of that may have been true. But a lot of it, as I look back, was that, what does our book talk about? Selfish, self-centered, discontent. You know, I don't think kindergartners are supposed to notice how nice the furniture is in someone else's house. But I knew. Boy, I definitely knew. And my father was, by 65, had reached, well, we know alcoholism is progressive. And there was a certain amount of ugliness that went on in the household. I had two older brothers, and one of them solved it by putting his nose in a book and going under a tree. And another brother solved it by going head to head. Well, I took after the head to head. I did not believe in rules, regulations, curfews. What's that saying? You're not the boss of me? Yeah. From an early, early age. Got into school and found that I loved the attention of being teacher's pet. I love the attention of the honor rolls and the special awards and show me off type things. And that went on really, the school was crowded, horribly crowded. So they skipped me from first to second grade. And again at about, I guess, I skipped sixth grade. Again, they were very crowded. And we were bright. They chose, there were like six of us that, and the same six, I think, got bumped. Now, I'm already a little kid. Never quite finished catching up with the growth thing. So on that second jump, I ran into a group of kids who were not impressed with honor rolls and sister's pet. I learned how to skip school. And there were a couple of kids whose folks weren't home in the daytime that we could hang out at their place. And that's kind of where it began. By the time I was 12, 13, my folks kind of threw their hands in the air and didn't know what to do with me. Well, the judge who used the word, what was that word? Incorrigible. Yes, yeah. I don't believe I could go blank on that. Sent me away to the home of the Good Shepherd in Omaha, where the good sisters would straighten me out. Well, I thought that graduation to eighth grade graduation, that I would be allowed to go home. Well, I was the only one that had that impression, you know. The good sisters thought that I would remain for ninth grade. And I didn't like that, so I took the wall. And it was maybe 3 weeks before they corralled me. And, I went in a diner where a really cute guy was serving coffee, and he took me home. And his parents didn't speak English, and we just made up the tale of where and from whence I came. And it took a week or two before he caught on that maybe. You got to remember, I was 8th grade, and I had skipped a couple, so I would have been maybe 12, 13. And they corralled me and put me into a facility where you couldn't take the wall. We were out in the country, a state girls' reformatory in the country. And, the cows didn't listen. They weren't giving me a ride. And so I straightened, just like I had done with the good sisters, I straightened up and got back on the honor roll. But they did have a point system that I could earn my way home. And my folks had moved while I was gone to a college town. But that meant I was released in the summertime. And that meant I knew absolutely no one until school started. And I graduated high school. And that I had always knew that I needed a job. I got a job as soon as I got home. And graduated high school. And I think the last year of high school, I got my own apartment, actually in the rooming house next door to my folks, a room full of college kids, a house full of college kids. And I blended in well. The drinking had actually started before the convent. But it wasn't really a big thing. It was, it's hard when you're that age. If it was offered, I drank. I always got sick. I always couldn't manage drinking as much. And I thought, it's because I'm small and I'm inexperienced. And, I thought it was kind of like lifting weights. If you practice more, the more you practice, the better you'll get. It took a long time for that. But I must have had a problem even at the high school age, because I can remember living in a house full of college kids, and there we partied hardy. It was romantic. With wicker baskets and candles. You put the wicker basket on top of the Chianti bottles with candles dripping. Very romantic. I thought I was living the life. But I can remember I quit drinking. I don't drink anymore. Yeah, 15, 16. it's possible I had a problem even then. But I thought everybody got sick and couldn't remember last night. I just thought it went along with drinking. I moved to Philadelphia right after high school because I knew one person. One of the girls from the house that I lived in had moved there already. And so that was enough reason to head for Philly. And when I think, I met my first, I met a guy. It probably took me a week to meet the guy. He worked with her. And when I think he owned a bar, he was a social worker by day, owned a bar by night. And of course, my talents qualified me for waitress. And when I think of the situations that I was in at that age as a mom, it just totally terrifies me. I was so, so very fortunate. I met a lot of people. I could have been an obituary. I could have been a headline. You name it. The crime page, the obituary page. Life was fun in Philly. And my daughter was born when I was 19. And I don't know what blessed me or where it came from. But I did somewhat settle down. Somehow or other, I had the idea that moms really don't party. And how I was blessed with that or where it came from, I was just blessed, like so many other things. And from that point, partying became my kitchen table, your kitchen table, backyard, barbecues, birthdays, christenings, anybody's birthday. One-year-old birthday? Sure. but things did settle down, at least on my end. We left her father when she was almost seven. And my company transferred me to New Jersey, helped me get an apartment, helped me move. I did quite well with the company I was with. I was with them for 17 years, hated them, totally. And to this day, and the truth of the matter is, to this day, they did not, my morals or standards were above them at that time. But somehow or other, I believe that you don't change jobs. You stay for the gold watch. Responsible, respectable people don't go around changing jobs. And I stayed with them as they reminded me how well they were treating me and how lucky I was. I was the first woman optician in Philadelphia. And what they didn't tell me is they were paying me a third of what they were paying the old guys who had been there for years. And I listened when they told me how well they were treating me. And actually, during all that time, drinking was weekends and holidays. When my daughter was 12 or 13, I met a guy. And he dropped me. And, the only respectable way to act is to pick up the bottle. I mean, if you've been dumped by him, you pick up the bottle. And he came back 3 or 4 weeks later, but I never put the bottle back down. That kind of kind of continued for the next few years. And but again, I was very rigid with, you're not late to work, you don't take off time. I think the only time I ever took off work is if my daughter was hospitalized or sick. Very rigid. I would smile and say, everything's fine. And, you know, as years went by, I stopped wearing makeup. I might poke my eye out, you know. Stopped wearing jewelry. Can't maneuver the chains. Smile, went to work, and said, I'm fine. And, you know, there were very, very few times it even dawned on me that maybe I had a problem. I can remember once, twice. Once my brother was in town visiting, and I knew he had a problem. Both my brothers had a problem. And I was hiding behind the refrigerator, spiking my iced tea because he was dry. And I didn't want him to know. Of course, he couldn't smell it. It was vodka. Yeah. And it kind of dawned on me, you wouldn't be hiding if you didn't have the same problem. But see, he was mean and ugly when he drank. He was argumentative. He was just like my father, and I wasn't like that. I was face drop in the spaghetti, fall asleep, and we wore pantyhose in those days. That was really bad for a stumbling drunk with long fingernails. Really bad. But I wasn't like my brother, my father, or my sister. My older sister would come to visit, and my father would hug her when she got in the door, and a half hour later, the plates would be flying. Yeah. And I wasn't like that. I got up and went to work. But then they started increasing the driving penalties. And I just knew I couldn't afford to pay the fines. And God forbid I would lose my license. I worked an hour away. You know, I'm never, ever going to drive and drink. And I would read newspaper articles of someone, DUIs or accidents, manslaughter, and I'll never do that. And of course I didn't until the next time, you know, the next 4th of July, the next birthday party. And I can remember one night driving home with one hand trying to make those lines come together and realizing I did it again. And I turned on the radio and 2 o'clock in the morning talk show, and a guy shared on this radio program that his life was just totally ruined. His wife wouldn't speak to him. The kids ran when he came in the house. Even the dog would run under the bed. And then he met a group of people, and he new friends. He didn't say AA, and I had no clue. But he started hanging with this group of friends, and now his wife loved him, and the dog would run to greet him, and he shared about taking his kid fishing and how beautiful life was now that he doesn't drink. And I'm boohooing because I'm a real POS. And maybe 3 years before this, a girl had worked for me. And in fact, we had partied together, barbecues, holidays. And I knew that her hubby really needed to ease up on the drinking. I mean, he had a problem. I mean, she would get calls from they had little kids, and she would get calls from the nursery school that he didn't show up. Or she would get home and find the kids strapped in the car seats in the yard and him passed out. And so he went into a 28-day treatment program. She joined Al-Anon. He joined AA. Life became beautiful for them. Now, I hadn't seen her for about 2-3 years. But at 2 o'clock in the morning, with the blubbering going on, I decided to call her. Thought maybe she could tell me what kind of diet he followed or what vitamin program or maybe what books he read. I was a book buyer. You name it, the self-help book, I owned it. I had read, you know, I'm okay, you're okay. I owned it. I had been through macrame and crystals and all sorts of expensive hobbies that lasted about 6 months. So I figured she could tell me what books to buy. And of course he answered the phone and he listened to me blubber and wine. And his suggestion was, what are you doing tomorrow night? And I said, well, I got church. And he said, well, do you think you could not drink? And I'll pick you up at 7 o'clock and we'll go to an AA meeting. Well, I thought that was the worst idea I had ever heard. I mean, I wasn't that bad. I knew it had helped him. But so there was an ice storm, and the radio was saying if only emergency vehicles on the road. So, whew, you know, got out of that one. And he knocked on the door. And my daughter was there. She was, I don't know, 20, 21. And I open the door, I see that it's him, and I go. And she's wondering, you know, why is, we haven't even seen him for a couple of years. And find out this meeting house is in a Catholic retreat house like a block and a half around the corner. Who knew? You know. And, of course, I cried from the front step. He didn't know what to do with me. We were early. He took me to the chapel, and I booed and hooed. And the girl who shared gave a terrible, terrible drunkologue. I mean, she talked about homelessness and judges and child custody and just rehabs, one after another. And I kind of was relieved because that wasn't my story. You know? I had a beautiful house, a nice car. Good job. And then they opened for discussion. And I heard all sorts of things that I could identify with. the old lady, he sat me at a table with a bunch of women, and they wrote their numbers on a piece of paper. I don't know. Might have been a napkin. Passed it around. And this old lady at the table talked about how much easier life was when she used to have to walk to go to the liquor store, and you can't go to the same one 2 days in a row. You have to go to one. You had to rotate your stores. And I understood that. I worked an hour away from home, and I rotated my stores because, God forbid, they would know. I wouldn't want them to think. And I identified with her, and we were at a round table situation. And then the person, a fella I could reach out and touch at the next table, shared about his dog doesn't run and hide anymore, and he took his kid fishing. And I knew, you know, I'm doomed. I am not here by accident. I heard so much that night. And he took me to the diner, Denny's, I think. Liquor stores close at 10. And in Jersey, meetings in those days were hour and a half, starting at 8:30. You know, I can't imagine now. But I guess it was the liquor stores closing at 10, you know? And he kept me up for another hour or two, and then we went home and poured out my booze. At my idea, poured out the booze. And I knew that I would be going to these meetings. And I knew it was okay, and I knew I belonged here. Until Christmas Eve. And Christmas Eve, I didn't tell my daughter where I was going for a week or two. I think she thought I might have been running with him. You know, she finally asked me, where's Janice? Yeah. And Christmas Eve, I bought a 4-pack of peach wine coolers and invited my daughter and her hubby over to open gifts. And they didn't show up. So I got my thumb in my mouth, and then I exchanged the thumb for the peach coolers. And thank God there was only 4 of them. And Diego called in the middle of the night. He was visiting with family. And somehow or other, he might have picked up on the fact that maybe I had my thumb in my mouth. And at 8 o'clock the next morning, off to the Alcathon at the intergroup office. So by Christmas night, I probably had 10 meetings under my belt. And you know, one thing I'm grateful, I have been so blessed with willingness. That convinced me. It was, I guess, what I needed. And I've never looked back. And I'm really blessed because I have no willpower. I mean, I can go on a diet that lasts 2 hours. I can give up sugar that lasts 2 hours. I have no willpower. And I am just grateful that he has gifted me with willingness. I asked that old lady that had shared to be my sponsor because she didn't drive, and that way I wouldn't be too much indebted. You know, she could be my sponsor and I could be her ride. And I can remember trying to convince her that maybe I didn't belong here because I didn't have jails or homelessness or DUIs or, you know, maybe I was just getting close. And she said, stick around, honey. You'll find you identify more and more. And she also used to say, well, let me ask you this. What if you were, I lived in a cul-de-sac. What if you were the woman across the courtyard looking out the window at you? And sometimes I'd miss the driveway and park on the lawn. The sun hit the front of my house, so I would lay in a lawn chair to read a book and wake up 12, 1 o'clock in the morning. The mosquitoes are carrying me away. The house is unlocked and garage door is open. And she thought maybe if I was peeking through the curtain, I might suspect there might be a little drinking going on. And that little lady, what I didn't know, raised her hand for everything. Speak at another meeting. Go to intergroup and fold newsletters. Volunteer for telephones. We used to actually have to go to the intergroup office and answer the phone. Speak at a jail meeting or a treatment meeting. It took them a year to get clearance for me to get into the jail, but she thought I could sign up a lot before that, while that year was going by. And I've always been so grateful for that, to go to workshops or district or intergroup. I just thought that's what you do. That's just part of being part of. When I was 90 days sober, I went to a Matt Talbot retreat we have up there. It's alcoholic group and an actual retreat weekend. And she let me know that we could do the fourth and fifth step while we were there. And of course, by this time, I was eager. I had an account with Hazelden to the point that the woman at Hazelden recognized my voice. And I spent a fortune on every little book and self-help guide to catch on to this program. They talked about meditation books yesterday. I had a half a dozen. By the time I finished book six, I forgot what book one. And as I said, hospital meetings, jail meetings especially, I started jail meetings in the next county. They didn't have any. And I was chairperson of corrections for years, it seems. And Dr. Bob's house for Founders Day, they had a bus that went every June, and we had a ball on that bus. And I got to Dr. Bob's house that first year and just fell in love with the history. The archivist there had all the time in the world for anyone who was interested. And that was an every year occurrence until we moved to Florida. We tried it a couple times after Florida, and it's a little more effort. But in Florida, I called someone and said, how do you get on this corrections committee? Well, 2 weeks later, I was alternate chair. And a year later, I was chairperson. And then I decided to help with the archives. And I think that lasted 6 or 7 years with the archives. So Jim has always been intergroup chair, district chair, whatnot. I've stayed with the archives and the corrections committee. I always like to say I'd rather be in the kitchen with my hands in the water. And I'll let those senators and politicians do their thing. And then 10 years ago, we found the magic. And the magic is to be there with the recording, and I sell my knickknacks and CDs, and I get to see and hug and love everyone. I come home from a convention just flying high, because during the year we work gratitude dinners, Founders Day dinners, long-timers, new-timers. We get all over the state, and I can go to a quarterly and see people from all over and just feel so in touch and so loved. As I say, I've always been grateful. They told me in the beginning, go to a big book and a 12 and 12 every week. And they didn't care which meetings I went to on the other 5 or 6 days. I still go to 3-4 meetings a week regularly. And love my big book and 12 and 12. Because I got a broken coper and a good forgetter. Families. This is my for real family. You're easy to tolerate. Real families can cause a little bit of work, a little bit of effort. And thanks to the big book and the 12 and 12 and all of you, I can keep reminded. And my life, I think I said the other night, tires still go flat, biopsies still come out wrong. This is my second time around. But I know that this too shall pass. And with the family and the support that I have, life couldn't be any better. That other stuff, that's just pesky details. The important things. Someone said this morning, the things that we thought were important just no longer come even close to mattering. I've got the best mate in the world. And hey, it took a lot of years. We've only been married 26 years. Those first few years, I kissed a lot of frogs. So some of us earn our rewards as we go through, and I know I have. Thank you.